Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
A group of students at Bentley University is trying to do something no American students have been able to do successfully: implement a model here for lending to poor people that has worked well in developing countries but not so well in the U.S. The Bentley Microcredit Initiative is designed to make loans to poor entrepreneurs in the Boston area who can't get traditional financing. WBUR's Fred Tice reports on how the program is doing so far.
When Sarah Kovacic helped to create a microlending program at Bentley University last year, she learned that making small loans to poor entrepreneurs is easier in poor countries.
You don't have all those regulations. You don't have all the different, like, the taxes. And also, you're not competing against Walmarts and Walgreens and your Targets and all of those. And so it's so much easier for a new entrepreneur to start up a stand and sell their homemade clothing or quilts or something like that.
The program being created by Kovacic and other students is the first one of its kind in the U.S. Tufts University has a $100 million microfinance initiative, but it's for international loans. Bentley's is the only one run by students, and the beneficiaries will be Boston area entrepreneurs who can't qualify for bank loans. The students have $300,000 to lend. Joel Penny is a finance major from Cranston, Rhode Island.
All of us that have started this have been really involved on campus before, but the chance to do something that makes a difference in the community hasn't really been there. To kind of get outside the realm of Bentley, you know, it's just a good feeling, and I'm glad that I can be a part of it.
Penny and the other students are following in the footsteps of Muhammad Yunus, the Bangladeshi microfinance pioneer who founded Grameen Bank and won the Nobel Peace Prize 3 years ago. The students are working with Professor Roy Wiggins, who initiated a course on microfinance this year and helped the students modify the Grameen model for the United States.
Unfortunately, the group lending model that Grameen made famous tends to be one of the mechanisms that does not migrate well. So the fact that you've got a group of women in a small village in Bangladesh that are probably fourth, fifth, sixth generation in a very tiny community, the group model works very well because the peer pressure to perform and to repay is very strong.
Wiggins says in Bangladesh, the downside for not repaying could be an inability to feed your kids, an inability to survive. In the U.S., he says, people can move away to avoid facing their obligations.
The U.S. also has a couple other things like wage-paying jobs, albeit maybe not great jobs, safety nets that come through aid and development agencies, food stamps, welfare. So you have some things that compete with starting your own business as a viable way of working your way out of poverty.
Compared with other countries, the U.S. just isn't a place with a lot of micro-businesses. 60 to 80% of businesses in the developing world are enterprises with one or two employees. In the U.S., those small enterprises represent just 8 to 20% of all the businesses. The students use Professor Wiggins' microfinance class to brainstorm.
And then there has to be a measure of success as to when did we achieve our goal.
Eric Melody, a senior from Enfield, Connecticut, is talking to fellow students about how they can measure that a loan has been successful.
When did we pull you out of poverty, or when did we, you know, get your business on its feet to the point where not only you're benefiting, but maybe other people in the community? When do we actually finish doing what we do? We give them a loan, we issue a couple more depending on how well they pay back, their business starts going. And then when do we hand them off? It's when they can actually take a loan from a commercial bank.
Melody, with fellow senior Joel Penny jumping in, discusses with the class how they'll choose the recipient of their first loan.
What do you look at? Where they live, maybe their demographics of the area, where their business is located.
We've had references of suppliers and customers.
Maybe even friends and family to see what they think.
But I was thinking more along the line of like a college application, you know, how there were like a bunch of short answers, like, why do you deserve this loan, or like, why should you get into this college over somebody else or something.
The students decide that they won't finance any startups because the risk of failure is too high. They want someone who already has a business going and wants the loan to grow that business. Joel Netto says the students would like to see something else as well.
We also look for people that, you know, have had struggles in life.
They settle on a welfare mom turned entrepreneur.
And so she has the passion and the drive to be successful.
Linda Joy dropped out of high school. Now she runs her inspirational publishing and conference business for women from a home office at the end of a dirt road in Lakeville, in southeastern Massachusetts. It's in a new house built with the craftsmanship of an old one overlooking Loon Pond. In the middle of her office is a refurbished oak teacher's desk. On the wall hangs a dream catcher.
I've had a lot of struggles in my life, from welfare to battered woman to not good relationships.
Joy started her first business, a consignment shop, when she realized that she and other welfare moms needed a cheap place to buy office clothes to go to job interviews. Soon, she had three stores, but then her husband, from whom she was separated, became terminally ill, and she went bankrupt paying for his medical care. But she was already thinking about her next business.
I just kept having a dream about a magazine.
So she started one. Joy uses her magazine, Aspire, to reach women interested in how to succeed. They pay to attend conferences she organizes with inspirational speakers. Joy needed to hire someone who could develop a sales strategy, and that's where the students come in. They're lending Joy $6,000, which she's expected to pay back over 2 years. They're charging 12% interest, which is the average rate for microloans in the U.S. Joel Penny says the students hope to create a model that students at every college and university can replicate.
We're hoping that we can create something, a process, a loan process that's so flawless and that's so effective in the United States that we can spread it out to all the schools across the country, eventually have them start up their own clubs, and then through that, you know, you can alleviate a lot more poverty than you would be able to just through Bentley. So we really just want to get a good system down and make it widespread across the country.
But the students feel their program is not ready to be duplicated yet. Right now, they're looking for new people to lend to. They'd like to make 30 loans at a time. In future loans, the students plan to charge an interest rate that will cover the default rate on the loans they make. But with one loan in place, defaults are still something they've yet to face. For WBUR, I'm Fred Tice.